Site here at WBAI, commercial free and listener sponsored WBAI. Our website is WBAI.org. And our pledge line, we're the umbrella for all of these organizations that you hear, is 212-209-2950. Make a contribution of any amount in support of A New Day, in support of WBAI. It's 8 o'clock here in New York City. Coming up next, Democracy Now!
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
There is something we need to talk about. Three words that summarize the whole history of humanity. Civilization, colonization, extermination. This is the origin of the ideology of white supremacy. This is me in the middle, and I just want to understand. Why do I bring myself into this story? Because I am an immigrant from a whole country. Neutrality is not an option. It's time to own up to a basic truth. A story of survival and violence. We know now what their task truly is. Exterminate all the brutes.
Exterminate all the brutes. That's the title of an epic new sweeping series by the Haitian filmmaker Raoul Peck about colonialism, white supremacy, and genocide.
Land was a magnet that attracted European settlers. This particular form of colonialism is called settler colonialism. But as a system, it requires violence. It requires the elimination of the natives and their replacement by European settlers.
As Republican lawmakers push schools to promote patriotic education, we'll spend the hour with Raoul Peck and his very different take on the founding of the United States and more. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden has raised the cap on the number of refugees admitted to the United States to 62,500 this year. The president's announcement comes after weeks of backlash from refugee rights groups and some Democrats who condemn Biden's previous decision to keep the Trump-era refugee cap of 15,000 a record low. Biden also ended Trump's restrictions on refugees from Syria, Yemen, and Somalia, and added more slots for refugees from Central America, Africa, and the Middle East. Rights groups applauded Biden's move. As it's expected, it could pave the way for the U.S. to raise its cap to Biden's original campaign promise of 125,000 refugees by the next fiscal year. However, President Biden admitted Monday the U.S. would likely not be able to reach either target this year or next due to the pandemic and roadblocks in the resettlement process, which Biden attributes to the Trump administration. The humanitarian group World Relief said last month the Biden administration's claims it needed to fully rebuild the refugee resettlement process were, quote, a completely false narrative and a purely political calculation, they said. Only about 2,000 refugees were resettled in the U.S. between October and March. In more immigration news, four parents from Honduras, Guatemala, and Mexico will be reunited with their children in the U.S. after being separated under former President Trump's zero-tolerance policy. They're the first families to be reunited on U.S. soil since the Biden administration began its reunification process. At least two of the mothers have been separated from their children since 2017. The Biden administration has initially agreed to reunite 35 parents with their children out of more than 1,000 youths who remain separated. The immigrant justice group, Al Otro Lado, in English, the other side, said the Homeland Security Department had done nothing to facilitate the return of the four parents. It was Al Otro Lado which negotiated their travel visas, paid for their airline tickets, and arranged the reunification. In a statement, the group said, quote, These mothers have been waiting in danger in Mexico for over 3 years. We represent over 30 other parents who, like these mothers, were ready for return on day one of the Biden presidency. There is no reason other than lack of political will for DHS to make these families undergo even one more day of separation and torture, they said. India reported another 357,000 new coronavirus cases and nearly 3,500 deaths Tuesday, as India's total caseload during the pandemic passed 20 million. A critical shortage of oxygen showed no signs of abating, with residents turning to social media to appeal for oxygen canisters for sick relatives and friends. Meanwhile, long lines at crematoriums and overflowing hospitals across India suggest the government is vastly underreporting the extent of India's crisis. This is a worker at a crematorium in India's capital, New Delhi.
People have to wait for at least 5 to 7 hours before getting a chance to cremate the bodies. The bodies are not even being cremated properly because there are only 4 to 5 priests who are performing the rituals. Although, as you can see, the bodies are being cremated rapidly, there is still a long queue of ambulances carrying bodies of COVID-19 victims outside the crematorium.
India's COVID crisis has spilled into neighboring Nepal, which reported a record one-day high of daily infections Tuesday. Nepal's army began cremating the remains of COVID victims in open areas of Kathmandu after temples and crematoriums ran out of space. Nepal's Ministry of Health has issued an urgent appeal for millions of vaccine doses, calling the crisis unmanageable. South America's COVID crisis shows little sign of abating. Argentina's total caseload reached 3 million this week, with many intensive care units and hospital beds filled to capacity. In Brazil, where COVID-19 has caused 1 in 3 deaths this year, officials have begun delaying appointments for second doses of vaccines amid shortages. The Biden administration is under increasing pressure to support a waiver of patent rights for COVID-19 vaccines as the World Trade Organization prepares to meet Wednesday and Thursday. Dozens of countries from the global south, led by India and South Africa, are pushing for a waiver to allow countries to ramp up production, vaccinate more people, and bring the pandemic to an end sooner. On Monday, the head of the World Health Organization said a WTO rule allowing for a temporary suspension of intellectual property rights was written to specifically address global emergencies like the pandemic.
The provision of waiving IP was meant for this condition, for emergencies, and this is unprecedented.
On Monday, Moderna said it would make 500 million doses of its vaccine available to poorer countries beginning late this year. Kate Elder, senior vaccines policy advisor for Doctors Without Borders, welcomed Moderna's announcement but noted the vast bulk of the doses are scheduled for 2022. She tweeted, "Doses are needed now." The United States reported fewer than 50,000 coronavirus cases on Monday as the seven-day average of new infections fell to its lowest level since October. Hospitalizations and deaths are continuing a slow decline. In Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis suspended the last of Florida's COVID-19 restrictions Monday after signing a bill that will allow him to overrule local emergency orders. New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut said Monday they would roll back most COVID restrictions on May 17th. New York City's subway will return to 24-hour service, with restaurants, museums, theaters, gyms, and retail outlets set to expand services. Meanwhile, the New York Times reports the Food and Drug Administration is preparing to authorize emergency use of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine for children ages 12 to 15 by early next week. In North Carolina, Andrew Brown Jr. was laid to rest Monday amidst growing questions over why sheriff's deputies opened fire on him, shot him to death on April 21st. Brown was a 42-year-old black father from Elizabeth City who was shot 5 times by officers serving an arrest warrant. One bullet struck Brown in the back of his head. Brown's family has only seen a 20-second snippet of police body camera video, which they say shows Brown had his hands on the steering wheel of his car when he was killed. On Monday, The Reverend Al Sharpton delivered the eulogy at Andrew Brown's funeral.
I know a con game when I see it. Release the whole tape and let the folk see what happened to Andrew Brown. This must stop. Enough is enough. How many funerals do we have to have before we tell the Congress and the Senate that you've got to do something in these times?
President Joe Biden began a nationwide tour Monday to promote his $4 trillion infrastructure plan, saying it's time for corporations and the wealthiest households to start paying their fair share of taxes. Biden spoke from a community college in Norfolk, Virginia.
I come from the corporate capital of the world. More corporations are incorporated in the state of Delaware than all the rest of the nation combined. And I'm not anti-corporate. But it's about time they start paying their fair share.
The Environmental Protection Agency moved Monday to phase out the use of hydrofluorocarbons, highly potent greenhouse gases commonly used in refrigerants. The EPA's plan calls for an 85% reduction in the use of the chemicals over the next 15 years. Climate scientists say a rapid phase out of hydrofluorocarbons worldwide would help prevent a global temperature rise of 0.5 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. In West Virginia, a landmark trial kicked off in federal court Monday as local governments seek accountability from drug companies over the opioid crisis. The city of Huntington and Cabell County in West Virginia are seeking over $1 billion from the nation's three largest drug distributors, McKesson, AmerisourceBergen, and Cardinal Health. Plaintiffs say the companies flooded their communities with addictive pain medications despite their known dangers, causing a public nuisance and fueling the country's devastating opioid epidemic, which has claimed hundreds of thousands of lives. If the case is successful, it could have major implications for thousands of similar lawsuits around the country brought by cities, counties, Native American tribes, and other plaintiffs. In Colombia, the family of 17-year-old Marcelo Agredo is demanding justice after a police officer fatally shot the boy while he joined a protest against the government's proposed tax reforms last week. New disturbing video shows Agredo kicking an officer, then running away as the officer draws a pistol and shoots the teen in the back. Agredo was at the march with his brother. His father's a retired taxi driver. At least 19 people have been killed and hundreds more wounded during the days-long demonstrations. Massive protests continue even after Colombian President Iván Duque withdrew the planned tax reforms as anger mounts against his right-wing government and worsening poverty, unemployment, and inequity in Colombia. In El Salvador, rights groups are warning of a worsening political crisis after the Salvadoran Legislative Assembly, which is controlled by the political party of President Nayib Bukele, voted to unseat five Supreme Court justices. The Salvadoran Attorney General has also been dismissed. The Committee in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador, or CISPES, is calling their ousting illegal and an assault on democratic institutions. Other Salvadoran groups condemned the move.
Condenamos categóricamente este golpe de Estado.
We categorically condemn this coup d'etat endorsed by President Bukele and executed by lawmakers of the New Ideas Party and other parties, who through the co-optation of justice are trying to consummate an unquestionable authoritarian political project in which all powers respond to a single person.
In response, CISPES is demanding the U.S. withdraw funding for the Salvadoran military and police and to stop sending aid that they argue only benefits the economic interests of the corrupt elite. In Mexico City, at least 23 people were killed and dozens more injured Monday night after a subway overpass collapsed while a train was passing over it. Two subway cars were left dangling precariously from the ruined bridge. Rescue operations were halted overnight while authorities brought in a crane to help stabilize the wreckage. Local residents had reported cracks in the bridge after a powerful earthquake in 2017. Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz is under fire for threatening to punish corporations whose CEOs have spoken out against voter suppression efforts like Georgia's recently passed election law. In a recent Wall Street Journal op-ed headlined, Your woke money is no good here. Senator Cruz writes, quote, this time we won't look the other way on Coca-Cola's $12 billion in back taxes owed. This time when Major League Baseball lobbies to preserve its multi-billion dollar antitrust exception, we'll say no thank you, he said. Walter Schaub, the former director of the Office of Government Ethics, responded, this may be the most openly corrupt thing any senator has said. Republican lawmakers in Kansas have failed to enact legislation that would have banned transgender athletes from participating in girls and women's sports. Monday's 26-14 vote by the Kansas State Senate was one vote shy of the two-thirds majority needed to override Democratic Governor Laura Kelly's veto. Similar anti-trans bills have recently become law in Alabama, Arkansas, Idaho, Mississippi, Tennessee, and West Virginia. And the transgender community is mourning the loss of ballroom legend and activist Jahaira D'Alto, who was fatally stabbed in Boston Sunday. She was 43 years old. D'Alto belonged to the House of Balenciaga, which said in a statement, quote, let us not forget her ongoing work against domestic abuse and continue to uplift her name and ensure her memory lives on in this ironic twist of fate, they wrote. Jahaira D'Alto was also a caregiver for other members of the trans community. Last year, on Mother's Day, she wrote on Twitter, quote, I am the mother who raised the children whose rainbow sparkled too brightly and blinded their birth moms. I cherish what they discarded for their babies who still needed raising. I did that, she said. D'Alto was at least the 21st trans person to be killed in the U.S. in 2021, with activists worrying this year is on track to become the deadliest for trans people. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. When we come back, we'll be joined by the acclaimed Haitian filmmaker Raoul Peck to talk about his new stunning documentary series, Exterminate All the Brutes. It's about colonialism, white supremacy, genocide, and more. Stay with us. By the Mingus Big Band, one of the songs featured in the series Exterminate All the Brutes. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman, joined by my co-host, Nermeen Sheikh. Hi, Nermeen.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world.
Well, Republican lawmakers are continuing their attack on schools for teaching students about the true history of the United States, from the genocide of Native Americans to the legacy of slavery. Last week, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell wrote a letter to Education Secretary Miguel Cardona criticizing what he described as the department's promotion of revisionist history, including the New York Times 1619 Project, which reexamined the pivotal role slavery played in the founding of the United States. In his letter, McConnell wrote, quote, Americans never decided our children should be taught that our country is inherently evil, he said. New York Times reporter Nicole Hannah-Jones, who created the 1619 Project, responded by saying, quote, Republicans across the U.S. are pushing laws to mandate so-called patriotic education and to prohibit the teaching of the 1619 Project about the nation's racist past. Well, today we spend the hour looking at an epic new series that delves deeply into the legacy of European colonialism from the Americas to Africa. The documentary is titled Exterminate All the Brutes. It's directed by the Haitian filmmaker Raoul Peck. It's been described as an unflinching narrative of genocide and exploitation, beginning with the colonizing of indigenous American land. This is the documentary's trailer.
Here is the story we have been told in Columbus's travel journal. They were discovered. But there is no such thing as alternative facts. There is something we need to talk about. Three words that summarize the whole history of humanity. Civilization, colonization, extermination. This is the origin of the ideology of white supremacy. This is me in the middle, and I just want to understand. Why do I bring myself into this story? Because I am an immigrant from a whole country. Neutrality is not an option. So you best duck. So you best duck. Or get out to where? It's time to own up to a basic truth. A story of survival and violence. We know now what their task truly is. Exterminate all the brutes. It's not knowledge we lack. You already know enough. What is missing is the courage to understand what we know.
We're miles apart.
Who are we?
But safe and dream.
What if, from the beginning, the story was told the wrong way? The nightmare is buried deep in our consciousness. So deep that we do not recognize it. Over the centuries, we lost all bearings. Because the past has a future we never expect.
That's the trailer for the HBO documentary series Exterminate All the Brutes, which is available on HBO and HBO Max. Time magazine said the series, quote, may well be the most politically radical and intellectually challenging work of nonfiction ever made for television. We're joined by the Oscar-nominated Raoul Peck, who joins us from France. He was born in Haiti, grew up in the Democratic Republic of the Congo after his parents fled the Duvalier dictatorship. His past films include I Am Not Your Negro, about James Baldwin, Lumumba, about the Congolese prime minister, the founding leader of Congo, Patrice Lumumba, and the young Karl Marx. Raoul Peck, it's great to have you back on Democracy Now! This is an epic masterpiece, this 4 1-hour documentary series. Can you talk about how you went from I Am Not Your Negro, which was the story of James Baldwin, to creating this masterpiece?
Well, basically, after I Am Not Your Negro, you know, I went throughout the world with the film. I was fortunate to be able to see how the film was received in many different places. And one of the common thread through that was the type of reaction that you just mentioned, like Senate leader Mitch McConnell. You know, this denial is somehow a sign that they feel that they are entrenched now. They are attacked. There is great fear about some sort of civilization going overboard. And it's, for me, it's a symbol that the type of lies, the type of propaganda, the type of abuse that we have been subject to during all these years. I'm old enough to have heard many other people like Nick Santorum, Mitch McConnell, and many others throughout the years. The only difference now is that we have the means to counter them. We have the means to tell the real story. And that's exactly what I decided to do, to once for all put everything on the table without any semblance of you know, holding back my punches. It was, you know, everything is on the table. I've been on the table for a long time, except that it was in little bits everywhere. And because, you know, science, sociology, anthropology, etc., politics have been cut up in little pieces. So we lost the wider perspective. And the film does exactly that, to bring us to the core story, to have the whole matrix of the last 700 years of basically Eurocentric ideology and narrative.
Well, Raoul Peck, in providing this broader historical context, you trace the origins of contemporary modern forms of biological racism to the Spanish Inquisition and the so-called purity of blood statutes, that is, limpieza de sangre, that was a means of distinguishing old Christians from conversos, that is, Jews, but also Moors, from the pure blood of Christians. These laws, you say, are the antecedents of the ideology of white supremacy. For the first time in the world, the idea of race based on blood was enshrined into law. So how should we understand the continuities between the purity of blood statutes and the forms of racist violence we witness today? Because the entire argument of this truly magnificent work is that the past is not really past. It is, as you say, the past has a future that we can't anticipate.
Well, the thing is that we are accustomed to not see history as a continuity, as you say. And we came from a very specific history. And we are not, you know, some sort of a tribalist, you know, tribe where that came up nowhere. Today's civilization is basically embedded in the capitalistic societies. And that story started around the 10th and 11th century with the first accumulation of riches, accompanied by killing and exiling of Jews, killing Muslims, trying to go all the way to Jerusalem. And that those first crusades were able to, you know, create a lot of, or not create, to basically extract a lot of riches that allows the monarchy to be able to finance trips to discovery new roads to the east. And the accident, which it was of the so-called discovery of the new continent, was not something they planned, but and when it happened, they basically created a totally new concept, which is the concept of discovery. And from that day on, you know, you could just go somewhere, put a flag, deploy military strength, and say, this is mine, no matter who was on that land before. And I remind you that at the time of Columbus, there were basically 100 million people on both continents. In America. So you can imagine what it meant. Within 100 years, more than 90% of them were totally annihilated. So it's a very specific moment in the history of the modern world. For the U.S., it seems like it's the beginning of a new world, but it's not. It's a continuity of a lot of action that have been you know, the source of European civilization, basically.
To a clip from Exterminate All the Brutes, where you explain settler colonialism.
From the beginning, the extension of the United States from sea to shining sea was the intention and design of the country's founders. Free land was a magnet that attracted European settlers. This particular form of colonialism is called settler colonialism. But as a system, it requires violence. It requires the elimination of the natives and their replacement by European settlers.
And this is another clip from your series, Exterminate All the Brutes. In this dramatized scene, a white man, played by the actor Josh Hartnett, engages in a standoff with a Native American woman leader.
I did not want to spill Seminole blood, kill Seminole children, Seminole women. Give us back the American property you stole from our good fellowmen planters and settlers, and I let you move to the Indian territory the U.S. government has provided for your people.
You call human beings your property?
They're slaves.
You steal land. You steal life. You steal humans. What kind of species are you?
So we were listening to Abby Asiola, or the woman who plays her, of the Seminole Nation. You say her story goes deep into the history of this continent. Talk about who she is and why you choose to center her and the Seminole Nation in the first part of your series, including their solidarity with enslaved Africans.
Well, the whole vision of the film is based in changing totally the point of view of who is telling the story. And in particular, because this story not only center from Europe, but also center in the bottom or in the middle of the United States of America, I had to start the film from that particular point of view of this woman who is the head of her tribe, of her nation. And basically, you know, the Seminole have been one of the rare tribes who were never really who did not really obey to the enforcement of leaving their territories. And they were called the invisible tribe for a reason. So it was important for me to start it from a point of resistance, from a point of an individual, of a woman, and watching this invader basically telling her to leave her land and to deliver the slaves that were in, of course, you know, that's a story that is not really well known, that a lot of slaves who escaped were welcomed by Seminoles and other tribes. And I wanted to start with those, that symbolic moment of resistance and also of solidarity. And from there, deploy the whole rest of the story.
Well, Raul, that is in one of the forms of continuity that you point to. The story of Native Americans is absolutely critical. And the erasure of this genocidal history, in particular in the United States, is evidenced, as you show, in the perverse use of Native American names and designations for military weapons, from Black Hawk to Apache, as well as military operations, the most recent and proximate of which was the May 2011 operation named Geronimo, to assassinate Osama bin Laden. So could you talk a little bit more about that, the way in which Native American history has been distorted, if not entirely erased, and the uses to which it's been put in contemporary U.S. politics?
Well, it's clear that, and you see that throughout the film, through different type of device or type of stories, level of stories in the film, is how everything is somehow connected. You know, the history of the Native American, which is for me the core story, whether it has been pushed out and erased sometimes or told the wrong way, it's like a phantom. It's already there. You can't get rid of it. You know, there are so many skeletons in those boxes that, you know, they come up and they are more and more coming out, and it's ironic that the very powerful U.S. Army, who was basically at its core created not only to fight the British at the beginning, but after independence, it was basically used to kill Indians and to keep slaves, black slaves, in on the plantations. So basically, the U.S. Army at the beginning was the militia, you know. So this story continue, you know. It's basically a story of 200 years, which is in the whole history of humankind is nothing. So as long of you can try to repress that story, but it's coming out there, you know. As long as there will be Native American or there will be blacks alive, they will continue to tell that story. There is no escape from it. And that's why what I was saying at the beginning, you know, when you see people like Rick Santorum saying that, well, when we came, there was nobody on this land. What did you do with the 100 million people? You have to explain that. So it's really, it becomes more and more absurd that Republican leadership at that level are capable of such ignorance. You know, it's mind-blowing, you know. So it's for me, it's just the logic of the whole story. And that's what we try to explain and to tell in this story of exterminate all the brute. And I really, my objective is really to make sure that kind of ignorance cannot be voiced anymore.
Raoul, another possible form of repression, another idea that has been repressed, is something that Sven Lindqvist, in his extraordinary book, Exterminate All the Brutes, from which your film substantially draws. He shows how closely intertwined the idea of progress is with racism and even genocide. And in the film, you explain Darwin's central, if unintended, role in providing scientific validation for racial prejudice and hierarchies with his notion of natural selection, saying, in fact, that genocide came to be regarded as the inevitable byproduct of progress. You show in the film as well the iconic late 19th century painting by John Gast, titled American Progress. But of course, this idea of progress remains central to the way in which global society and American society are organized. What alternatives do you see to this ideology, and where do you see it, if at all, taking shape?
Well, it's a very complicated question to answer, and I don't really go by that way in assessing what the future will be or what are the solutions. I think any solution will first have to start with the real story. You know, we need to sit down around the same table and you know, agree on the diagnostic. We have to agree on the genocide. We have to agree in the whole line of history that's been going on for more than 700 years. Otherwise, there is no conversation possible. So I am not, and we are not, if I can speak for many others, it's not about, you know, revenge. It's not about, you know, it's about, you know, let's see the world as it is, and let's name, you know, all the things that happened and had bring us to what the world is today. You know, that's what it is about. It's not about, you know, your showing how culprit you are or not. It's about acknowledging the past and the present, because they are strongly connected. So for me, you know, is the same thing as democracy. As long as we accept democracy as our mode of communication, if we want to come out of that situation, it's implied that we have to sit down and have a real conversation, you know, an honest conversation. But unfortunately, we see that the dominant narrative is not ready for that. You know, they are totally the back on the wall and can't let go of their huge inequality that is actually in those last 30, 40 years that have never been as extreme as it is. And it's you know, people, you know, the January 6th is also another sign of a democracy which is in dire situation, you know, that this country who had been, you know, which had been seen as the forefront of democracy and justice was able to attack the very center of that democracy. So the confusion is just huge, and it's difficult for me to acknowledge any type of solution. I think the solution should come from us, from all of us, and a collective decision. That's what the only vision I can have.
We're talking to Raoul Peck, the acclaimed Haitian-born filmmaker who then grew up in the Democratic Republic of Congo as well as the United States. He is the director of the new HBO four-part documentary series, Exterminate All the Brutes. We continue our conversation after break.
Without a sword or a gun, for the gold and the silver you're searching is hidden out there underground. But there's a beast on the cloak, guarding against the foe. And the ghost from the river is watching, she won't let you get any close.
American Dream by J.S. Sandara, one of the songs featured in the series Exterminate All the Brutes. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. If you want to get our daily email digests of news, headlines, stories, and alerts, go to send the word Democracy Now!, one word without a space, to 66866. Text the word Democracy Now!, one word without a space, to 66866. We are continuing now with our conversation with Raoul Peck, the Haitian-born director of the new HBO four-part documentary series, Exterminate All the Brutes. I want to go to another clip from the second episode in the series where Raoul Peck, he is the narrator of this series, explains what happened after Columbus arrived in what is now Haiti, where Raoul Peck was born.
Instead of the bustling ports of the East Indies, Columbus came upon a tropical paradise populated by the Taino people, what is now Haiti. Then, from the Iberian Peninsula, came merchants, mercenaries, criminals, and peasants. They seized the land and property of indigenous peoples and declared the territories to be extensions of the Spanish and Portuguese states. These acts were confirmed by the monarchies and endorsed by the papal authority of the Roman Catholic Church. That's more or less the official story. And through that official story, a new vision of the world was created. The Doctrine of Discovery.
That's a clip from Exterminate All the Brutes, the 18th century known as the Age of Revolutions. But we often associate this time with the American Revolution or the French Revolution, not the Haitian Revolution, which was led by black slaves, the first country in the Western Hemisphere to be born of a slave uprising. You say, Raoul Peck, the only revolution that materialized the idea of enlightenment, freedom, fraternity, and equality for all. You know, Haiti becomes a republic and the U.S. Congress would not recognize it for decades, fearful that the fact that Haiti was born of a slave uprising would inspire the enslaved people of the United States to rise up as well. Can you talk about the erasure of the Haitian Revolution, your own country, Haiti, its significance for you, and how the U.S. dealt with Haiti all of these years?
Well, you know, the best words for this is what Michel Rolfe Trouillot have written about silencing the past. It was key for the U.S. and all the other European powers to silence the Haitian Revolution, because it was, in their eyes, worse than Cuba in the 50s. You know, we were under a strict embargo because all of them had economy that still relied on slavery. And Haiti was the worst example they could have. And Haiti was also beating them in terms of their own ideology of enlightenment. Because Haiti, the first constitution of Haiti, basically stated that any man or woman or person who set foot on the island is a free person, you know. And none of the others' revolution dared go so far because they were totally involved in slavery and were profiting from it. So there was no way that the Haitian Revolution could be accepted. So when people say that America is the first democratic country in the Western Hemisphere, it's not. It's Haiti. So, and the story continues until today. You know, we have a history of being attacked, of being invaded, of many of our leaders come to power with the acceptance of the U.S. Government, and it continues until today. You know, the last two presidents we had came on into power thanks to the support of the U.S. Government. So we have, unfortunately, a long story of abuse from the United States and also of resistance, because one thing that we can say is that the Haitian people were always, whether it take, you know, 30 years, 5 years, or 2 years, they always make sure that they can get rid of those corrupt leaders.
I want to ask about one of the critical issues, Raul, that you raise in the last part of the film, a critical question. You talk about your own experience living in Berlin, where you lived for 15 years and were also a film student where you made a film on a Nazi torture compound. You say when you were there that you thought a lot about how a country that's produced some of humanity's best philosophers, scientists, and artists also operated one of the most devastating scientifically run and engineered killing machines. Now, many people have reflected on this question and the seeming contradiction in this fact by concluding that the Holocaust was some kind of historical aberration. In other words, that it stands very much outside the history of the Enlightenment and the ideas of humanism and universalism on which it apparently stands. But your film seems to suggest, even as this is raised as a question, your film suggests that other conclusions could be drawn. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it's nothing new. In fact, there are many scholars that have worked on that specific question for the last 50, 60 years. And of course, there is resistance to say that the Holocaust was a very special moment in the life of Western civilization. But it's not. It's a continuity of a will of genocide, a will of eliminate people that are deemed inferior. The structure of genocide are always the same. You know, the person who invented the word genocide, you know, Raphael Lemkin, in 1943, you know, we went to the New York Public Library, and in that library, in his file, there is a list of something around 42 previous genocide before the Holocaust. And he included in it, of course, the genocide against the Native American people. So, you know, trying to make any type of genocide special, I think, is a really not correct way of seeing the history of humankind. They all copied from each other. They are all, of course, specific. You know, you can't directly, you know, compare the genocide in Rwanda with the genocide in Cambodia and with the Holocaust. You know, they have different, ideological reason. They have different historical reason. They have different people involved. But as a structure, as a system of genocide, they all obey the same pattern of first, you know, pinning down a special category of person, of people, and then start saying that we are superior to them, and they are insect. And as soon as you come to the point where they are animal, or they are savages, or they are insect, you are allowed to kill them. And that's the excuse that was always needed for every imperialist, for every conqueror, in order to eliminate whoever was in the land they wanted to conquer. So it's similar. It has been similar throughout the history of humankind. And it became more specific within the concept of the capitalistic society, because then it was also linked to profit. It was also linked to make bigger territories in order to exploit large communities. So I have had that discussion many years ago, back ago, including in Germany. But today, I think we should move past that, what I would call the confrontation between, you know, who got the biggest pain. You know, do we put slavery confronted to the Holocaust or the Rwandese pain? You know, it's not about that. We are all from the same human family. It's not about, you know, who have suffered the more. I think we have to acknowledge every piece of history that happened on this planet, and we have to give responses to them, and we have to explain why they happened. And because this is the only way that eventually we can prevent them to happen again and again.
And we want to talk more about that after this last clip from the series, Exterminate All the Brutes.
Trading human beings, what sick mind thought of this first? Brought by force and pushed to death. Slavery, or the trade, as they refer to it euphemistically. A state-sponsored genocide. What does this say about a civilized world?
So, if you could talk more about what this does say, and going back to the beginning, talking about genocide, the term coined by Raphael Lemkin, colonization, as well as civilization, and how you find hope today in the discussions, if this is all acknowledged, though you're saying just acknowledging this is not enough.
Yes, of course, but acknowledging it, it's a big step. And that's what I wanted to say before, is that, you know, for even for me as a filmmaker, telling that story, it took a lot of thinking in order to tell a story where, for the first time, you tell the story of the genocide of Native Americans, and then you tell the story of slavery, and then you tell also the one of the major extermination story, which is the Holocaust. You know, and for the first time, I think, at least on film, you can see the connections between them. And for me, it's a huge step. You know, it's taking all those atrocity in a different context. And for me, it can only be the beginning of a wider conversation. You know, instead of you know, each part keeping their own malheur, they're keeping their own death, their own pain, and sometimes being used against each other, you know? And that's a device that have been used for many, many years. And for me, the film is also a step to break that separate narrative. There is not many different stories. There is one historical knowledge, and we need to access it. And to your question, and that's the leitmotiv in the series, you know, we already know enough, you know. The problem is, what do we do with that knowledge, you know? And because everything I say in the film, everything that Sven Lindqvist tells the story about, or Michel Rolf Trouillot, or Roxane Dambois Ortiz, those are facts. Those are highly competent scholars who spend their life documenting the horror. And my use of their work with them was exactly that, to force the conversation to a more sovereign type of discussion, and to push aside the blurring of history, push aside the ignorance that still, you know, reign in the discussion. And you know, I'm not going to name them again, the two politicians I named, but I think population are more and more interested in learning where they come from. You know, and there is a reason why everybody now wants to have their DNA analyzed, because there is some sort of feeling of connection, you know. And it's our job as filmmakers, and you as journalists as well, to lay that in plain sight, and then we can say, okay, what do we do with this, you know?
That's exactly. We just have a minute. What do we do with this? Your film begins and ends with the same line that Sven Lindqvist says again and again: it's not knowledge that we lack. What is missing is the courage to understand what we know and draw the conclusions. How does your film and the work of these other authors enable that courage?
You know, I was primarily educated by Jesuits. and one thing is, maybe from that I believed in the notion of knowledge. I believe in the notion of learning the truth. And the film, for me, is the first step. And my wish is that every school, every university is able to watch the film and have discussion around it. Because that's you cannot go further if you don't know your own history, whatever the side you are on. But you need to know. And it's not about accusing you of anything. It's about facing your reality. Because you can't understand what's going on. You can't understand why policemen are still killing black kids and black men and black women in this country if you don't know where it comes from, you know. And it's unfortunate, as you know, we are in a time where we have huge instruments for communication, huge instrument to learn, for learning. You can go on the internet and learn about everything, but we lack a very condensed matrix of those histories that are, you know, we have been built by, you know, and each one of us need to do our homework. Otherwise, I don't see any nonviolent outcome out of this.
Well, you've given us a remarkable assignment and an epic work to watch for all. Raoul Peck, acclaimed Haitian-born filmmaker, director of the new HBO four-part documentary series Exterminate All the Brutes. Visit democracynow.org to watch our 2018 interview with Raoul about his films The Young Marx and I Am Not Your Negro, about James Baldwin. That does it for our show. A very happy birthday to Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us. Stay safe.
And you're tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI and WBAI.org. www.AmericaContributions.org on the web. We're listener-sponsored and commercially free for 61 years, thanks to listeners just like you. Do visit our website, WBAI.org, and consider supporting this commercial-free and listener-supported, totally listener-supported radio station. It is 9 a.m. on a Tuesday morning, and coming